Hello and welcome to The Check-In. I'm Janet Saidi. This is where we check in together for community connection, conversation over the airwaves, and wow, it's never been more important as we are in one of the most important times that we all come together in this great American democracy, Election Day, to vote. But in this 2020 election, as for so many things 2020, we have anxiety. You may well have just this morning turned on your NPR to hear a discussion about concerns about violence in November. And if you're like me, you thought, hang on, we have to take a moment to breathe and sort out what this means for our community. How are you feeling about voting this momentous election? Today, all things voting. We'll take some time to sort out the questions, and we will take some time to remember that there is still much in this democracy that we agree on. We just have to find it. Join us. Call us at 573-882-4991 after the news. Welcome to The Check-In. I'm Janet Saidi. As November 3rd, Election Day, approaches, we're thinking about ourselves as voters and the challenges we face this year as voters. We're talking about how our voting is so very different this election. Not only our voting, but the way we perceive voting, as we all are facing mixed messages in a highly polarized climate that is really surrounding this election year, where some politicians are calling out voter fraud, others have legitimate concerns about voter suppression, and now concerns have emerged as President Trump's campaign has promoted a plan to send partisan poll watchers that his supporters are calling an army for Trump to the polls, and people are worried about violence at the polls. But yet, this is an American democracy. There must be things that we agree on still, but yet a lot of this seems unheard of, and it probably is unheard of in some ways in America. How does it play out in how we're voting here in Missouri? We'd love to hear from you. Let us know. Have you already voted? We'd love to hear your story if you voted. Are you concerned about voting? And if so, what are you concerned about? You can take your pick now. We used to be concerned about the pandemic. Now maybe you're actually concerned about violence. I hope we're not overplaying that. But I turned on my NPR this morning to hear a very serious discussion about the potentials for violence around Election Day in November. Here are the ways you can join us. You can call us and join the discussion at 882-4991. You can also find us on Twitter. We're at check-in underscore KBIA, at check-in underscore KBIA. If you tweet us your questions, we'll find them and we will bring them on air with our guest during this hour where we're talking about all things voting. You can also text us. Text us check-in. That's got a dash in the middle of it. Check-in to 88474. We would love to hear you. From you right now. How are you planning to vote? What are your concerns about voting? What do you see playing out in Missouri? But just tell us, maybe you're the first time voting for whatever reason. Maybe it's your first time being 18. We would so love to hear your story. Yours would be a unique one. We haven't heard from first-time voters yet in all of our conversations about voting. So give us a call, 573-882-4991, or join us any of these other ways. And today we're checking in with someone who has researched extensively about voting and elections here in America and abroad, and is a real expert on this and can help us sort us out some of these questions and lend some data and some evidence and some sanity to all of these discussions right now that we're facing as we are in this election year, as we head toward November 3rd. We're talking with MU Professor Mary Stegmaier. Professor Stegmaier is MU's Vice Provost for International Programs and the Director of MU's International Center. She's also a political science professor and, as we said, extensively researches and watches elections and voting behavior here and internationally. Professor Mary Stegmaier, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
It's such a pleasure. So let me first start, Dr. Stegmaier, with the kind of the elephant in the room. I wasn't going to go here first, but as I was saying in our intro, I turned on the NPR this morning. It wasn't the Barrett hearings anymore. NPR is not doing that right now, wall-to-wall coverage. It was instead a conversation on Point with Magna Chakrabarty about violence in November. So really the question is, this seems very, very momentous for Americans to be talking about this. You've researched abroad, international elections and voting, and you've probably encountered these kinds of concerns about elections in other countries, but not in America. Does this appear as momentous to you as it does to me?
Yes, it is an unusual circumstance for the United States to find itself discussing the potential of violence in the days after an election. I think one of the things to be clear about is the rules and laws that we have in place around elections in the United States, the safeguards that we have in place at the polls, what the rules are for who can be in a polling place. So it's not the case that just anyone can go in and hang out there all day and interfere or challenge in the voting process. So you have to have credentials to be there. So there, each state has rules about this. But also, you know, this is an unusual election in that we're seeing so many citizens voting early, whether it's through mail-in voting, in-person absentee, or mailing in absentee ballots. And in recognition of this, and also that we anticipate higher voter turnout than we've seen in recent elections, that we might not have a result on an election night, or that final results, we might have to wait longer for that. Maybe it's an extra day or two, but the important thing is that in polling places, the county clerk's offices, the state election officials, state election offices, there are processes and guidelines that have to be followed that work to ensure accuracy and transparency so that we can all have confidence in our democracy and the results of the election.
Okay, so that's a good reminder. You know, this is not our first time out here in America with voting. You know, we've got the processes set up at many levels, at our county levels. We've talked to Boone County Clerk Brianna Lennon many times on the show. A lot of the processes are, you know, at the county and state level. We've also talked to Secretary of State Jay Ashcroft on the program. So that's a nice reminder that we are set up to do this well. You know, one more question, though, about these concerns is, you know, that the president has indicated that he's thrown some doubt on the voting process and has mentioned that he might not trust the election results post-election day. Maybe people take this seriously. Maybe people don't. But this strikes me as historic, correct? And what are you watching for on and after November 3rd?
Mm-hmm. It is most unusual for a president to be repeatedly saying that he might not accept the results of an election. Of course, there are constitutional processes in place that make this difficult for a president to just simply refuse to accept the results, but there could be legal challenges in the process. But one of the things that concerns me is when the impact that this has on confidence that Americans have in our electoral processes, it undermines the legitimacy of our elections if we are repeatedly hearing allegations or unsubstantiated allegations of fraud or fraudulent behavior. Political scientists who have studied election fraud find very, very little evidence of this, and certainly not anywhere near the types or the magnitude of fraud that President Trump is sometimes suggesting. And so in the long run, this can really erode democracy in the United States. If people are so divided and are not aware of what the evidence is, this can have long-term implications for the health of our country and our political system.
Okay, let me just take a moment to say we're talking about voting here on The Check-In, and we're checking in with MU Vice Provost Mary Stegmaier, who researches extensively on voting abroad and here in America, and she's at MU. She's a Missourian, so we're going to kind of drill that down into what that means for us and our communities. What some are calling the most important election of our lifetimes, how are you planning to vote in this most important election of your lifetime? Have you already voted I'd love to hear how that went. What are your plans? What are your concerns? Maybe you're excited about voting. We'd love to hear about that, too. So you can join us by calling 882-4991. That's 882-4991. Or tweet us at checkin_KBIA or text us at 88474. Professor Stegmaier, you mentioned the mixed messages that have become partisan. And let me unpack this just a little bit with you before we go into a break. We've just got a couple of minutes. But, you know, we do have a sort of partisan mixed messages going on where voter fraud tends to come from Republicans, unless I'm missing something. They seem to be the ones who have kind of latched onto voter fraud as a problem, whereas progressives and attorneys and others are concerned about voter access. Can you characterize for us whether voter fraud does seem to be a problem when you look at the evidence? And if not, why is this a campaign issue? And why is President Trump expressing concerns about it from your perspective?
Yeah, so there really is not any evidence that expanding mail-in voting. We have states in the United States that have long done mail-in voting. So studies have been done, but there's really no evidence of an increase in fraud. There are checks in the process of sending in a mail-in ballot before it is actually processed and counted. Same with absentee ballots, whether it is signature checking or matching or notarization. So there's not evidence that there's any kind of increase in fraud. President Trump made voter fraud an issue in the 2016 election as well, in a different way. And at that time, he was alleging that hundreds of thousands of people who are not eligible to vote in the U.S. would be casting ballots. And again, there was no evidence of that, and nor has there been, not only in that election, but in any election.
All right.
One of the things...
Yeah, Dr. Stegmaier, hold that thought. I think that's fascinating, and we want to talk about if there's very little evidence of voter fraud, why are we hearing so much about it? And we'll get down to some more issues here. We're talking about voting on the check-in. We want to hear from you. Tell us your story. Have you voted? How are you planning to vote? You can call us 882-4991-573, wherever you are, 573-882-4991. We are going to talk more about voting in this momentous election, November 3rd, right after this. This is The Check-In. Thanks so much for being here with us. The stakes are high for elections this year. The pandemic already was challenging our voting processes. Now, civil dissonance is a concern. If you're like me, you're stopping and wondering how we got here. Today, we're talking with MU Vice Provost Mary Stegmaier. Dr. Stegmaier researches elections and voting in America and abroad. She's an expert on this stuff. She's also the director of MU's International Center and serves as Vice Provost for International Programs. She's written extensively about elections here and abroad in the Washington Post. She writes a lot on voting behavior and elections. So we're talking with Vice Provost Stegmaier about elections as usual. You can join us, 573-882-4991. How are you planning to vote? Have you already voted? Are you concerned about it? Let us know what you're thinking. So, Professor Stegmaier, as we went into break, we were talking about voter fraud. You're saying there's not a lot of evidence, but there's a sort of political climate that is polarizing right now with the partisanship that we're in and the current climate. Do you see this? I want you to continue what your thoughts were, but also, you know, are you seeing this influencing how voters think about and trust voting and the democratic process here?
Yeah, so it is affecting how voters are thinking about voting. We see a partisan difference in voting early. It seems to be much more heavily Democrats who are turning out to vote at this time, and Republicans in surveys are indicating that they're likely to wait until Election Day. So voters are picking up on the partisan cues that the campaigns are delivering. I think, you know, part of, you were asking earlier about what, is there a strategy? And while I don't have, you know, any special insight into President Trump's campaign strategy, part of the allegations of fraud, both in 2016 and today, are, I think, working to appeal to his base of voters. In 2016, it was concern about undocumented immigrants or people who are not U.S. citizens trying to vote at the polls. And there was no evidence of that, but that was his claim. And that appeals to the same narrative at that time about building a wall and concern about immigration and migrants coming into the U.S. Right now, it is in the midst of the pandemic, the campaign seems to be attempting to make things appear as if things are normal, that the pandemic is over, that things are under control. And so to take another step, you might say, well, then why should we make voting safer? Why should we expand voting opportunities for people who are older, who have underlying health conditions? The pandemic is not something we should be concerned about from his perspective, or at least how I interpret his perspective. And then the parties are also sometimes concerned about, will changes in voting rules impact their party? And so if they are doing analyses of who will turn out to vote on Election Day, who might turn out to vote if voting is permitted earlier than Election Day. So there's different kinds of strategies, I think, that could be in play for the different approaches to early voting.
All right. Professor Stegmaier, let's go to a caller. We have Sharon from Columbia is calling in to let us know about her voting experience. Sharon, thanks for checking in with us. What was your experience voting?
It was really good. I mean, I have read all the literature about how to vote remotely, but then I went online and looked at where I can vote. I'm in Columbia, Missouri. And, you know, you just have to bring your ID, ID. And, the way this is important is that if you're over 65, you do not need to get your papers certified.
Okay. Yeah, that's good. Good to remember. Yeah. So how did you vote, Sharon? How was your voting process? Were you doing a mail-in?
No. I went downtown to the city hall, or I don't know the name of the exact.
The clerk's office? Uh-huh.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And I had the form about online vote or remote voting. So I brought that with me, but I didn't need it. You needed ID, and they pull up my name and all, and then give me a piece of paper with different issues that we're voting on, and then the presidential vote.
Okay.
And I get down over in the little dots.
Yeah. Yeah. Did that feel good, Sharon, to get your vote in and have it done?
And then I just flipped it in their computer, you know, it automatically feeds it in.
Yeah.
And we're done.
All right. All right. Great. Sharon, thanks so much for calling. And congratulations on casting your vote during this, what many are calling the most important election of our lifetime. So, you know, Sharon reminds me that voting is, it actually feels really great to vote. You know, we were talking about this on our production team. Our producer, Alicia Haywood, cast her vote yesterday. And we were kind of talking about how you kind of do get a warm and fuzzy feeling from voting. I don't want our problems, our concerns about voting to take over the entire narrative here. A lot of people are voting, and it almost always feels pretty good to vote. Although you let us know how it feels for you out there, listeners checking in with us. Let us know if you voted. How did it go? We heard from Sharon. We'd love to hear from you. Just whatever you're doing, whatever your concerns are, whatever your plans are for voting, let us know. 573-882-4991. And you can join the discussion. 573-882-4991. Call us from wherever you are. We'd love to hear how voting is going. You can also tweet at us at checkin_KBIA or text us to 88474. And yes, Alicia is reminding us, our producer, Alicia Haywood, that she voted in Palm Beach County, Florida. So if you're out there and you're voting, let us know where you're voting, whether here in Columbia, out in mid-Missouri, in Kirksville, wherever you're doing it, or how you plan to vote, let us know. We're talking with Mary Stegmeier, who researches voting here and abroad and elections here and abroad. Professor Stegmeier, well, we need to ask you about something I'd like to ask you about is voter suppression. The other side of the coin, in some ways, that we're hearing some talk about is, you know, and that is, I think, historically documented for sure, is, you know, from Selma and other momentous events, we know about voter suppression in our history. How are we still fighting voter suppression right now in 2020?
It's an excellent question. And I think it's an important question to think about in terms of the racial protests against police violence in the summer that continue at this point, and some of the concerns over racial justice. So, you know, it's important for everyone to be registered to vote. It's important for people to be aware of what news they are consuming and whether it is reliable news, who they are listening to. If people have questions about voter registration or how to vote or can you vote absentee or where do you vote on election day, you can always get this information from your county clerk's office, not just here in Boone County, but whatever county listeners are listening in from. So there are organizations that are aware of attempts to suppress voters. So going to the polls, ensuring that you are registered to vote, and not relying on other groups to do this for you in terms of voter registration.
Absolutely. You know, when it comes, we have a clip here. We had Secretary of State Jay Ashcroft on the check-in. Let's just hear a little bit from Secretary Ashcroft, since you're bringing up Professor Stegmeier voting methods. He has been called upon, including by a bipartisan effort that was led by our Boone County clerk, Brianna Lennon, to expand mail-in voting. He declined, and the state of Missouri also declined to expand mail-in voting for everyone. We have this clip of Secretary Ashcroft. He came on, and he was basically just saying that he really prefers that people do it in person. Let's hear this first clip from Jay Ashcroft. It's just less than a minute, but here's in his words, and I'd like to get your perspective on what he's saying, Dr. Stegmeier. He's talking about how he just prefers in person.
I will disagree with the idea that we should make it easy for people to vote and do so in a structure where ballots will be lost and votes will not be counted. I believe as an election authority, I have a responsibility to work to make sure that it's not only easy to vote, but your vote actually counts.
Right.
And when one out of every 50 on average is not having their ballot count when we push people to do it by mail, that's a problem. We should not be doing that. We should be making sure that people can easily vote and their vote will count. And that's why I am firmly recommending to people that they do in person.
All right. So Jay Ashcroft there, Secretary of State for Missouri, saying, I really recommend that people vote in person. He is not talking about voter fraud there. He's talking about something else, actually, Professor Stegmeier, that he just feels that your vote is safer in person. What's your response as someone who watches from a nonpartisan viewpoint, watches and researches elections here and abroad and voting mechanisms? What's your reaction to our Republican Secretary of State, Jay Ashcroft, talking about his preference for the in-person method?
Yeah, so this has been a source of a lot of debate over the course of the summer,
yes,
especially with the pandemic. And so mail-in voting or any kind of absentee voting where a voter is not actually going to the county clerk's office to cast the ballot, voters then are completing the ballot at home or, you know, in their own personal space. And it can be the case if voters are not carefully reading the instructions on how to cast that mail-in ballot or absentee ballot, that it can go back to the county clerk's office, but a piece of that process has been missed. So if they fail to put the ballot in the security sleeve, if they fail to sign the ballot envelope, or if they fail to get it notarized, so first-time absentee voters or mail-in voters really need to be careful, as any voter should be, when they're completing a ballot. When you go to a polling station, poll workers will explain the ballot to you. They will say, but the instructions are also on the ballot, if you make a mistake on the ballot, bring it back to us. We will spoil that ballot and we can issue a new one. They explain the process to you, but it's also written on the ballot. You don't have that person at home to explain how to vote. So it is up to voters to pay attention to the instructions. States that have been, that have had mail-in voting for over two decades, voters are accustomed to what they need to do to submit their ballots by mail. And so we don't see any higher rates of invalid ballots or ballots that are not completed properly in terms of signatures and those kinds of things happening in those states. So I agree in a little part with his assertion, but through education and making voters aware that they need to be reading the ballot, there really is not much difference in sort of security or the counting of the ballots.
Okay, thank you so much for clarifying that issue, Professor Stegmaier. So, you know, while we're hearing about voter fraud, a legitimate concern, but a very different concern is that when you're mailing in some ballot, there might be instances of people not following instructions or not being very clear or completing it properly. I think that is also still fairly rare, though. Do you even have a percentage? I think that we've heard sort of 3%. Or 2 to 3%, as I actually think what Secretary Ashcroft was saying on our show. Does that sound about right?
That sounds about right. That is okay. About right. 2-3% are statistics I've seen, and those usually come from specific states, but yes.
Okay, let me just say to our listeners, we've only got a few more minutes. I mean, we will continue talking about voting this hour, but we've only got a few more minutes with Professor Stegmaier. So give us a call if you have a question or a comment or you want to let us know how you're voting. Please let us know, 573-882-4991. Give us a call. Let us know how you're voting. All right. I actually have another clip that I think would be great to hear from. We also have spoken with, KBIA has spoken with the Missouri NAACP president, Nimrod Chappell Jr. And in this clip, he was talking about how voter suppression is not a conservative value. We're talking about these partisan stances on voter fraud. Voter suppression isn't something that conservatives are normally calling about, but they are a political stance that he just says directly it's about one party staying powerful. Let's hear from Nimrod Chappell.
I hate to even link it with conservative because this is not a conservative value. What this is a political stance to ensure that one party is able to stay on top of the population that it is supposed to be providing a service. And that is the service of to the public of being an elected official. They aren't interested in the realities of the situation. So I fully anticipate that no matter the course, that they will double down on these measures.
All right. Professor Steckmeyer, we only have a minute or so left, but Nimrod Chapel brings up a really important issue, which is I've also heard the attorney Sherrilyn Ifill mention that race is a key factor in the issue of voter rights and historically in voter suppression. That is, minorities, Black voters, marginalized groups that are shut out of the voting process with some of these efforts that take place in the name of voter fraud. Do you see, we've just got a minute left or so, but can you let us know what you see in your research when it comes to race and voter suppression?
Yeah, so obviously in any democracy, we want everyone able to participate who wants to participate and has the legal right to participate. And so ensuring that we're looking at our practices and laws that are in place to see, are they disproportionately impacting one group or another group? It's the role of various civic organizations to advocate, whether it's the NAACP or other civic groups, to ensure that they keep these concerns and issues in the forefront of our debate. It's part of improving the caliber of our democracy and our electoral process.
Okay. And Dr. Steckmeyer, just 30 seconds or so left. Can you leave us with some final thoughts on what you think as voters in this democracy that we should all keep in mind? Just got about 20 seconds. What are your thoughts?
Yes, of course, I would always say that it's important to turn out to vote. And I encourage people to be active in the campaign, whatever side you're on, but also in the election process. Participating or working as a poll worker gives people an entirely different perspective on what goes into administering democratic elections.
Thank you so much, Professor and Vice Provost Mary Steckmeyer. It's been a pleasure to have you. Please stay safe.
Thank you so much. Goodbye.
And thanks. Goodbye, Professor Steckmeyer. Let me just remind our listeners, as Professor Steckmeyer was saying, you can get your voter information. You can get it at Show Me Boone website. That's Boone County Clerk's Office, whatever county you're in. You can also go to the Secretary of State's website to get information about voting. We're going to come back with two guests who are making waves in the art and music world with a composition about voting. It's called The Voters Broadcast. We'll hear about that next. Hi, this is The Check-In. Thanks for joining us today. So here on The Check-In and everywhere right now, we are talking a lot about elections, candidate voting, the issues. And one thing you don't expect to combine with all these conversations necessarily is music and art and new music. Philip Glass, John Zorn, the Kronos Quartet, and voting. They don't necessarily go together, but our two guests for the rest of this hour do exactly this. They take their art to the streets, even to the airfields and brickyards even of our everyday lives, and try to engage real people in their works and their conversations and on the issue of citizen engagement. So my guests are composer-musician Lisa Bialava and artist Cheryl Oering. Their latest work is called The Voters Broadcast. It's a collaboration that's about building community and activating citizens and all of us in an election year using art and music to get us out to vote. You can still call us, join our conversation, let us know if you voted. We are going to be talking about a special project that artist Cheryl Oering does called I Wish to Say, where people write postcards to the president. What would you write right now to the president? What would be on your postcard? You can let us know. 573-882-4991. We've only got a few more minutes of the show, about 15 more minutes, but we'd love to hear from you on voting, your plans, and what would your postcard to the president be? 882-4991. That's 573-882-4991. Let me tell you a little bit about our next guest. Lisa Bialava, is a composer, producer, and singer working as an artist in residence at New York's Kauffman Center for Music. Lisa has composed works that bring community making into her compositions. Her bio reads like a who's who in new music. She sings with the Philip Glass Ensemble, and it's really cool to have Lisa Bialava here in The Check-In talking about her latest work and The Voters Broadcast. Lisa, welcome to The Check-In.
Thanks so much. It's great to be here.
It's great to have you. We also have with us Cheryl Orring. Cheryl Orring is an artist whose most recent project, I Wish to Say, takes vintage typewriters out into the streets for citizens and passersby to type postcards to the next U.S. president. And all I can say about that is, wow. And she's done this for years over multiple presidents. I Wish to Say, the text from these postcards is used by Lisa Bielava, our other guest, in the Voters broadcast. So this is a choral work that incorporates a lot of these postcards and the text from these postcards that people have just written to the president off the street. So we're really happy to have Cheryl Orring here as well to talk about I Wish to Say and these postcards. Cheryl is a professor and chair in art and art history at Wayne State University. Cheryl Orring, glad to have you with us also in the check-in.
Thanks. Wonderful to be here.
So first, you two both do highly innovative art and music in your fields, really pushing boundaries already, but in different fields. How did you two find each other? Lisa Bielava, do you want to start with that?
Sure. Yeah. Cheryl and I met in 2006, and she had just started doing the I Wish to Say project. And we met through the Creative Capital Foundation, which supports artists that do innovative work. I had been doing a project that was sort of crowdsourcing text, and we sort of found each other, stayed in touch for years, and followed each other's work for years. And then finally, we started finding ways to bring our parallel visions together, culminating in this current project, which has really been such a pleasure.
Well, that's awesome. Cheryl, why don't you talk to us a little bit about how you have felt having these texts from these postcards that kind of start in the highways and byways and now are being sort of broadcast through this wonderful choral music?
Well, it's amazing. First of all, it's wonderful to work with Lisa. And I will say, you know, it's quite a poignant and moving experience to type these postcards. It's a very personal act. A one-on-one act with myself and the person who's dictating them, but then to take the messages and broadcast them through the music to a larger audience is quite exciting. And it's one of several things I've been doing this year. I've also been taking quotes from the postcards and making them into billboards in Charlotte, North Carolina. That happened, and finding different ways to basically amplify the voices of everyday people in this incredible election year.
All right. Amplifying the voices of everyday people and what they say in these postcards. We want to hear a clip from Voters Broadcast Part 2. It just debuted yesterday. It's debuting in three parts. The third part will be in a couple of weeks. But let's first, can you just describe for us, Lisa, what we're hearing in this? Let me ask first, though, what do you hope Voters Broadcast does for listeners? What do you hope that they're hearing, Lisa?
Well, you know, when I read, and I did read, in fact, all of the archive of Cheryl's postcards that she's collected since 2004, I went there and went through it all and read these 3,500 plus, almost 4,000 now. And so the words you're hearing are words that are being dictated through Cheryl's I Wish to Say project to, years of sitting and future presidents. So I think what I'm hoping is as a way of sort of energizing voter engagement, I'm hoping that these musical events can help us understand what it is that we want from our leaders. Because one of the things that this project does is focus not on the actual presidents, but on the people and what their relationship to the leaders is. So that's what I'm sort of hoping. It will focus people in a way that gets them prepared for voting.
All right. And what we're hearing in the clip for Voters Broadcast Part 2 are a lot of petitions, they're basically saying, please, Mr. President. They say things like, please consider us. Please leave us alone. Please take a moment. Yeah. These are not only directed at President Trump, as I understand it. These have been previous presidents, and we don't know which ones. And it really doesn't matter. I kind of like the fact that these are just what people, as you just described, Lisa, what people want from any president, really. There are a few where they get a little bit more pointed. Please make your mother proud. Please read the Constitution. And you've put these into a chorus. Let's hear these petitions, and then you can both tell us a little bit about what's behind these lyrics.
Great.
Please,
rights. That is the Voters Broadcast Part 2. It's being unveiled in three events that are online. You can actually view them and witness the next online unveiling of Voters Broadcast Part 3 in a couple of weeks. Let me go to Cheryl. We're hearing the text in Lisa Bialava's composition here, Voters Broadcast, but the text is coming from you, and you've sat with people as they type out these petitions. How strong are petitions in the overall project of what you're getting with I Wish to Say?
Well, let me also make clear that I'm the one doing the typing. So people
dictate
the cards, and then I do the typing. Or
they dictate to you.
I have a sometimes. Okay. Yeah, they dictate. So the public is not doing the typing. I think Lisa has amplified that aspect of it more than sort of comes through in any individual message. I usually sit down with someone and ask them how they would like to begin. How would you like to begin your postcard to the next president? And sometimes I say, if I were the next president, what would you wish to say to me? And then they go forth from there, offering their thoughts. I would love to also just invite your listeners to participate. We are doing a virtual version of this, of I Wish to Say, through the University of Michigan and the Brooklyn Public Library. And your listeners can sign up for a Zoom session with a typist. It's pretty exciting, this new way of working that I've developed in the pandemic.
Yes.
And they'd be welcome to join if they go to my website in the news and events. There's a link. So
okay. So at your website, we can all do our I Wish to Say postcard from the middle of Missouri now because you've had to go virtual. So that's a highlight, I suppose, of going virtual. Lisa, yeah. let me ask you, Lisa, a little bit more about the music here, and we want to hear a little bit more about the project, Cheryl, and what you find when you're out dictating these. But before we get too far from the music, Lisa, the sounds here, I mean, it's new music, so there's always a little bit of dissonance, I would say. I'm not a music critic, but I'm going to call it dissonance in the music. How does the music how does putting this together in these choral works reflect the spirit of the texts to you?
Well, you know, it's interesting. You just mentioned that, you know, in the current paradigm, of course, and in the pandemic, you know, Cheryl is using the remote, you know, now it's possible to dictate a postcard to the I Wish to Say project from the middle of Missouri. By the same token, it's possible to sing in my choral work from your living room, no matter where you are in the world.
Oh, really? Oh, tell us about
that. Right. These pieces are being put together without any actual in-person contact between the performers.
Mm-hmm.
So part of what you're hearing is you're hearing individual people. They're not aligning with each other, and they're not trying to align with each other. They're actually just singing in their homes one at a time and sending it to me. So part of what you're hearing actually is that I'm allowing the chaos of that, the beauty of each individual person's voice, right? I'm not trying to make them blend with each other. I'm not trying to make them into a chorus. I'm trying to bring individual voices, which is really what voting is, right? Individual people's voices together. You know, they say in Germany, when you vote, you say, habe gestimmt, which means I gave my voice. That's how you vote. That's how you say that you voted. Mm-hmm. So part of what you're hearing is that is a new process that I've had to sort of learn through the technology of finding ways to make music, large-scale musical projects in lockdown.
That's incredible. So let me just clarify, Lisa, you are working with professionals. I was aware that you were working with musicians and even the singers by remote, and that sounds fascinating. But they are professional singers, right?
No, actually,
really?
They are not.
Oh.
They are not. What you just heard, those are amateurs and students. And it's really important to me that any
okay.
kind of voice, I will have any kind of voice participate. And it's important to me that it's not, that it is not reserved just for, you know, people who are highly skilled with recording equipment. People are singing at home on their phones, and then they upload their recordings to me, and I figure it out, a way to make it work.
Okay, that's awesome. So that really is incorporating true voter voices and people voices into your art. And that's fascinating. Let me just remind our listeners that we're talking about voting. We're talking right now about voting and new music and art. But we'd still love to hear about your voting experience, how it went, if you've already voted or how you're planning to vote. You can still let us know at 573-882-4991, 882-4991. I'm talking with artist Cheryl Oering and musician and composer Lisa Bialava about the Voters broadcast. It's based on Postcards to the President, which is Cheryl Oering going out into the highways and byways with her vintage typewriters and typing messages to the president for people that she encounters. What would you say to the president if you could say it on a postcard? You can say it here on the radio with us as well, if you'd like. Let us know, 882-4991. That's 573-882-4991. You can also tweet us at checkin_KBIA. Lisa, back to your music and using and incorporating true people voices and voter voices. You've also staged big compositions in places like airfields and brickyards, if I'm reading this correctly.
Yes, right.
How is that different than, and also how is bringing all these voices together by Zoom now different than what you've done previously in a concert hall? And why are you going to the trouble to do this?
Well, I mean, the reason I'm going to the trouble, of course, is that we're facing an election now, and
yes.
I can't, as an artist, I think both Cheryl and I feel that this is the time if this isn't the time for art to be, you know, to be providing a place for people to enhance their experience of their own way of being in the world, then I don't know what we're for, right? Mm-hmm. But yes, as it turns out, this project and making large scale work in lockdown is actually not as different as I thought it would be, or as I originally experienced it to be early on. There's something about the fact that, you know, if you work over large distances, people can't exactly hear each other. You can't have a unified, you know, sort of conductor that everybody can see, you know, and that's kind of the situation now too. We are dealing with big distances, and it sort of opens up the possibility of finding a more democratic, if I can say, you know, way of putting together music instead of a conductor up there in front waving his arms around. And it's mostly a he, right? this is an opportunity for people to come towards it in a way in which they have their own voice and their own way of making music. This is the same way I do things when I'm working on vast spaces as well, because there's no way to have a centralized sort of, a center of power.
Okay. Cheryl, let me ask you, we've only got a couple minutes here left, unfortunately, and so much more to talk about. But I wanted to just ask you, as someone, you're a little bit like us as journalists, especially radio journalists, in that we go out into the highways and byways and we ask people questions and we hear from them. And it can sometimes be really surprising what we hear. What has surprised you after years of spending time with people and their petitions and their letters pouring their hearts out on postcards to the president? What has surprised you, and what do you think voters want?
I think voters want to feel like their personal concerns are heard. Mm-hmm. And what never ceases to surprise me is the way people will open up with me when they sit across from me and my typewriter and tell me some of the most personal stories. The one from this year that I remember the most was a young woman from Iran who'd been living here for 5 years and hadn't been able to go home to see her family because of the travel ban and visa issues. And she was just begging for that possibility to go back to Iran and then come back here to finish her studies.
Wow, that's
incredible.
And it
was a heartbreaking letter.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Wow. I can relate to that as well, just the humbling experience and just the honor of going out and talking to people and listening and having them pour their hearts out to you and tell you their stories is something that is really a profound thing to experience. And I feel super privileged to be able to experience it. Mm-hmm. And Cheryl, so a lot of what you're doing with a lot of your projects do address free speech and First Amendment rights, which include freedom to petition, interestingly, and ask for things of your president and people in power. Do you feel like free speech and the First Amendment rights are important to your work, Cheryl? And we've just got about 15 seconds for your answer, but please let us know.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely, yes. It's at the core of what I do.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's great. Lisa, in the last 15 seconds, anything to add to this?
You know, I've learned a lot from Cheryl. I've seen her, you know, while she sits there and listens to people's voices. And I'm always just, it's always such a pleasure to be working with an artist who can, you know, who can influence me, who can inspire me in that way, even though it's across mediums. You know, this is a very fulfilling experience for me working with these texts. I feel very, very privileged to be able to work with these texts.
All right. Thank you, Lisa Bialava and Cheryl Oering, for sharing your art. I'm glad you two found each other. Please stay safe and take care. And thanks for joining us.
You too. Thank you.
All right. That's it for the check-in. Thank you for joining us also on the check-in today. And you can hear the third part of that voters broadcast on October 28th. It's unveiled at 2 p.m. Central just before the election. Look at Lisa Bialava's website. We'll also link to it at kbia.org. And voter information. You can get that from the Boone County Clerk's Office, showmeboone.gov, or Secretary of State's Office at sos.mo.gov. You can also go to headcount.gov. Thanks for joining us on The Check-In. It's produced by Alicia Haywood, Chris Husted, and me, with our amazing student producers, Jane Mather Glass, Hannah France, Olivia Moses, Isabella Paxton, Alex Stetson, Veronica Moheski. I'm Janet Saidi. See you Thursday. Stay well and stay in touch.